35-54. We got a four share, fourth overall in the market, second overall at night. So what is it that these people are talking about when they say, boy, that Henry, you know, he better start getting... I'll tell you what they're talking about. They're talking about a show that nobody wanted to succeed, nobody thought could win, nobody thought could last, and here we are, 3 years into it, syndicated, adding affiliates, and generally being a success and going home and loving our families and having ourselves a couple of cocktails and loving life. But I don't know what it is. I think the problem is that I just don't like talking to half of these guys that do these radio columns. I don't want to talk to them. I don't want to have cigars and drinks. I don't really even want to be a part of the so-called radio establishment. I'd like to hang out with the people that I do. I got some very nice people I work with here. Crozier, he tips a couple on the weekend. Schaefer, he's an Irish drunk. Or what are you, a WAP? You're part? Yeah, okay. And, you know, just we just want to have our lives, do our show, and get out of here at 10 o'clock. And we don't hang out, and we don't live the life of let's go have some cocktails with the guy from the LA Times or whatever, or from the Orange County Register, so that he'll write good stuff about us. Doesn't that seem a little disingenuous? I would think the people would appreciate us more because we don't particularly want to have anything to do with them. They want to call up and get a quote. I just assume not to talk. You know, I don't want to talk to them because none of the people that listen to this show read the newspaper, as evidenced by the calls that we get. I'm joking, but they don't read it. They sure aren't reading no radio column. Who picks up the paper and reads that stuff? So why am I even talking about it if they don't read it? Well, they are listening to me right now, so we thought we'd set the record straight. Now, that's between 7 and 10. Those are the only 3 hours that I can be responsible for in this radio station. The only three are the three that I'm on, 7 to 10. Now, you say, well, you did go down 4/10, Phil. Well, the fact of the matter is that young listeners leave AM radio behind. Nobody listens to talk radio in the summertime. Everybody has a hit of one proportion or another when it comes to the summer book. But the fact remains that we're third among English language stations, down from second. We're sixth overall in the market, down from fifth. So I ain't exactly ready to pull out the schick, man, and start cutting on any veins anytime too. Huh? The wave beats us and coast beats us. That's it. And then a whole lot of cats that are speaking Spanish, and God bless them. We stay, but you know what? I don't speak Spanish. I got to be able to compete in that venue. KFI Junior, the one up the dial that hires all the people who don't have work here anymore, between 7 and 10, a 1-7. A 1-7. And the other talk station that has the two guys who I think are very nice guys, you know, they're on the FM, the station with the really big morning show and nothing else, 25-54, a 0.9. A 0.9. That means they don't even have 1% of the available sets listening to the show. So I had to say it. I had to set the record straight for those of you who don't care, for those of you who are moderately interested. Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. The only other thing that I didn't mention was that among listeners, like 800 years, we lost all of our 800-year-old listeners. We just, I mean, especially between that 9 to 10 hour. Man, at KFI Junior, they just picked up all the 800-year-olds, and there's nothing we can do. That 9 to 10 hour, I'm telling you, over there on KFI Junior, they're really stomping us with those 900-year-old listeners. We can't for the life of us figure out how to get them back. But we will. Maybe take by the time I'm 800. Anyway, it's the Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. May I speak, if I could, in the most tasteful manner that I can, about Payne Stewart's jet, the Learjet. By the way, I understand that five people died in that Learjet crash today. Do we know who the other four are? It would be a nice thing if maybe somebody would mention their names, because all I've heard today is Payne Stewart's jet went down. Payne Stewart died. Tragic thing. Colorful guy. Good golfer. Won himself a few tournaments. I wouldn't put him up in the... Personally, I wouldn't put him up there in the elite. He won a lot of money. Two pilots and two agents? Is that a joke, or is that who actually... Thanks a lot for that. Wait a minute. It's true? Two pilots and two agents? Well, it wasn't such a great... No, it's a terrible thing. Now, Payne Stewart was, you know, he's a good golfer. He won a lot of money. He didn't win a lot of tournaments. Over the years, you would think that a guy of his quality, in terms of his ability to golf, would win more tournaments. Payne won the U.S. Open, so you got to give him that. He won three majors. I think he won two U.S. Opens and a PGA, so you got to give the guy that. A lot of guys go through their whole career, they never win a major tournament. Payne Stewart did it. He had the multicolored knickers. He had a deal with the NFL. People remember when Payne had that sponsorship deal with the NFL, and he would wear the colors of the NFL teams. He'd wear the Seahawks colors one week and the Patriot colors the next week. But everybody had a great, nothing but kind words to say about the poor guy. And he, his jet, a Learjet, and I wish I knew specifically, and I guess it doesn't much matter. It was a Learjet, privately owned Learjet. They had five, how many people did they have on board? They had five people who died, so I would assume one of them was the pilot. Third highest money winner ever. So, but you know what? My understanding is it kind of bothered him a little bit. He wanted to be more than that. He wanted to be a real champion. He wanted to win more tournaments than he did, and perhaps he should have. They said he had a great swing. He was not one of the golfers that I followed. I like the guys that are, I don't know, the weird, the real whack jobs, the Tiger Woods. These guys, you don't know if they're going to implode one week to the next. I was a big John Daly fan. I just want to see if he could stay dry from one week to the next. You know, I followed John Daly for years to see whether that guy could keep that case of Scotch brand out of the trunk of his car. And he couldn't do it. All right, John. But in any event, the guy gets into a Learjet today, takes off from Orlando, somewhere near Orlando, Florida, and is on his way to Dallas, Texas. The jet, my understanding, and I think I'm right when I say this, was partially owned by him. So he had an ownership interest in this jet. Something happened. Something happened that I'm sure we will get an explanation for. The plane lost pressure, something. They scrambled two Oklahoma Air National Guard jets. It was a twin-engine Lear 35. Thank you, Terry Ray. Chartered twin-engine Terry Ray Elmer. Who? Terry Ray Elmer. May have suddenly lost cabin pressure soon after taking off for Dallas. It was on autopilot. It continued to fly northward and crashed in South Dakota. Also killed were Stewart's agents Robert Fraley and Van Arden, and the two pilots identified as Michael Kling and Stephanie, excuse me for mispronouncing this, Belle Garige, I will say, or Belle Garig. All right, so this is a jet that flies north and crashes there in South Dakota as the result of some loss of cabin pressure. And the thing that grabbed me about this story when I read it was immediately, wow, he owned his own jet. Isn't that cool? And there are people who own their own jets. You know, I mean, I don't know anybody personally owns their own jet, but we've all read of people who have purchased their own jets, some small Lear jets, some wide body. I keep remembering that scene from Any Which Way But Loose where those clowns were going to the poker game in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and they drove their jet down the middle of Jackson Hole. It was that Clint Eastwood movie. It was not too good. But this guy had his own little Lear jet. He was flying it upside down, all that stuff. These guys who got all that money and they own their own jets. Not that they're irresponsible pilots. Most, if I'm sure all, if not all, are great pilots and understand the rules of the air and all of that. But owning your own jet sounds like a really cool thing, doesn't it? And I said to Schaefer, yeah, it sounds good, but I wouldn't trust myself to own my own jet. I would not trust me. See, owning something means you have to maintain it. Owning something means that you actually have to hire the pilot. If you hire your own, you own your own jet, you got to hire the pilot. You have to be responsible for the maintenance. You have to be responsible for the ground crew. You're responsible for everything. And if you're the pilot yourself, then naturally you're responsible with flying that thing as well. All of a sudden it struck me, sounds like something I don't want to get anywhere near. It's bad enough I own my own car. You know, I mean, I'm on 5,000 miles in that Honda. I ain't had the oil changed yet. That thing could just drop a rod on the freeway, and if I was in a jet, I'd be dropping more than a rod. Because that's me. I can't get the thing to the dealer on time to get it serviced. I'm constantly behind on the oil changes. I'm constantly trying to catch up. And, hey, you know, what's the problem? You drop a rod. Well, it's a new engine. It's money, and that's it. It's not your life. And if I don't get the tires fixed, I try to get the tires, you know, new tires, rotate them, all of that stuff. Well, if one blows on the freeway, you're standing out there for half an hour changing it or 20 minutes or whatever. I happen to change tires very quickly. For me, it'd be about 5 minutes to change a tire if I don't get hit by a truck. And then I'm off and I'm running. But can you imagine a guy like me or a lot of you guys out there? I mean, be honest. If you owned your own jet or you owned your own airplane, you own your own jet? How do you do that? What's the first thing? Yeah, I got a jet. Can I park it? I don't know what are you talking about? I don't know where to park it. Can I use the... Get out of here, you own your own jet. Can I use a hangar?
keep it at your house. Jesus, I don't know. I got a jet. I got a part. I got a. How do I get it? I guess you can fly it here, but we ain't going to let you land. Well, what am I going to do? I bought the bloody thing. There's no place I'm going to keep this thing. Where do you keep your own jet? Where do you keep, for instance, if you're Hugh Hefner, who owns his own Playboy jet, that big black jet with the Playboy bunnies, or any of these guys that own the big 737s, or some of these guys own their own 747s, where do you keep it? At your carport? Larry Flint, where does he park that? Larry Flint has his own jet. Where does he park that? Burbank. So they got hangars for guys that have their own jets. You know, if it ever becomes an epidemic, if the country keeps going the way it's going with all of the money that's being made and all of these good times, everybody's going to need a place to park their jet. We're going to have no jet space. And there'll be no hangar space for people to park their jets. And, you know, but beyond that, Learjet is a much smaller thing. The Good Sam Club is what? Yeah, the Good Sam Club is going to the jet. What is the Good Sam Club? It's like Price Club. Oh, I didn't know. I thought it was like Price Club. I thought you were talking about Sam Goodies. They're going to go into jet parking. Maybe at Costco to have a little jet parking. But where do you park it? Where do you maintain it? Where do you hire the pilot? What do you do? And I would never in my life. And I heard about this crash today. I heard about the jet going. And then I heard that Mr. Stewart was a part owner in this jet. And I said, Jesus, H, every jet that flies commercially in this country, when it hits the ground, it has a flock. It has a swarm of guys, maintenance guys, jet mechanics, whoever, who are crawling all over that thing. They're looking for fuel leaks. They're making sure that the bolts are tight. They're checking things like this pressurization situation. Make sure the doors are sealing properly. How long has it been in the air? Is there metal fatigue? And even the FAA doesn't get it right all of the time. And that's a federally regulated thing. Commercial jets being federally regulated, they're taking a look at this thing. If you own your own Learjet, you have your own little private jet, anybody give a crap? Is there anybody? What is the guy just knocking on your door once a month? You got to get that damn thing inspected. Well, I meant to, but you're going to have to go do it. Well, can you do it? No, I will not. Do you got to do it? You got to pay for it. This is the Phil Henry Show here. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. Anybody own their own jet? And can we get a ride in it sometime? 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show. Phil Henry Show at 1-800-449-8686. And that Chinese crack that he made, was that really all of that? Was that really all that horrible? It started, I believe, Alice, who was a British golfer, made the comment that American golfers know as much about Britain as, or Europe, for that matter, as, say, Chinese people. So Payne Stewart did a Chinaman impression. He said, hey, Peter, you know, I do that thing. He's just doing a bit. You know, he had the buck tooth thing, and people once again reacted the way that they react. It forced an apology. The poor man had to go with his tam o' shanter in hand and say, gee, I'm really sorry, I didn't mean to do it. I saw it. It was funnier than hell. I mean, as funny as it gets for an athlete. Athletes are not funny. I mean, if some guy, like an athlete, whips off a dead baby joke from 1958, everybody thinks, oh, what a personality this guy's got. He's a regular knee slapper, this guy. But so he came out with his Chinese impression. He's got to apologize. Next thing you know, the jet goes down. What a weekend he had. First he's doing Chinaman impressions. Next thing you know, the jet's going right to the side of somebody's barn. That's rough, man. Charlotte on the Phil Henry Show. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Doing okay.
Good.
You were commenting on where would you park your jet?
Where would you park your jet?
Well, I'd worked one summer in American Storage as a carpenter framing houses.
American Storage?
Pardon?
American Storage?
Oh, no, America's Georgia.
Okay.
And we were building houses that had two-car garages attached to each home, and around the back side of the garage, there was an extra-large door to open to park the planes, and each home was built around a grass airstrip.
Wow, man, that's some rich folks, huh?
Yeah, they called it a fly-in neighborhood.
A fly-in neighborhood.
There were a couple of Lear jets, but most of them were Cessnas, things like that.
So you'd have a back door on the car, on the garage itself.
Right, real big hangar door.
And put the cars out on the driveway for the weekend if you're going to
there was room for the cars also.
Good Lord, how big were these? How large were these garages? The garages were big enough to...
The houses were 6,000 square feet.
That's a big house, but the garage, in other words, had two cars and an airplane in it.
Right.
Now, I wonder where a guy parks his Learjet. Same thing?
They parked them right in there.
And what about those 747s?
The largest plane they had out there was a retrofitted 727 for skydiving.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kept in a large hangar at the end of the neighborhood where the clubhouse and pool were.
Where the clubhouse and pool were. This was a gate-guarded community for pilots.
Right. It was called Wingate.
Wingate?
Wingate Farm.
Windsock Farm.
Yeah. They had a big windsock, the whole nine yards.
A huge welcome home. You're at Windsock.
Yep. A couple of the guys, actually, also one of them was a hot air balloonist.
He kept that balloon deflated where? In his house? In his bedroom?
He kept the basket and the balloon in his garage, and on the weekends we would be working on Saturdays, and he'd be out there pumping it up.
So, no kidding. So this is a whole neighborhood full of these nutcase flyboys, huh?
Right.
Windsock?
Most of the ones that owned the Cessnas, the Beechcraft, they were usually doctors or lawyers.
Right. Now, did you ever see these guys taking off and landing and just...
Yeah, all the time.
Are their wives running out with a bag of lunch, you forgot this, and off he goes, huh?
Oh, they'd be packing up the lunch and the family in a cooler.
Well, the better question is, did you ever see one of these guys crash? No, I shouldn't say that. Well, did they ever have a close...
The grass into the mud one.
Wouldn't you think that was a little... If you got your family living in a place like this, and here comes Flyboy in from a couple of cocktails up there at the hangar... And he's coming in for a landing, and he takes out three television antennas. Well, that's wild, sir. And that's rich. And they're rich. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. So now we know that that's at least the guys who can afford it have their own homes, their own hangars attached to their homes. That's one way you do it out there in Windsock, Georgia. Here in California, and I don't know wherever else that you were, wherever you're listening, I don't know how to do it here. I ain't never seen a place like that. They got little private airports around here. You see the little tiny airplanes parked out on the... Out on the tarmac there, where the guys go out on a weekend and they contact, you know, and they, you know, there's one guy out there who's trying to get the propeller going. Some guy in one of those funny looking hats. Yeah, you know how they grab it and they've got those weird hats that they wear. What are they wearing? Is that for ears? For your ears? In other words, the sound won't drown you out. And they pull that big blade down, and they get the thing going, man. It's like out of Spirit of St. Louis. But where do you park those big jets? And the point is, how do you even maintain them? How do you even hire, if this is a charter job or it's something that you don't fly yourself, how do you go out and hire a pilot? You don't go through the Yellow Pages for something like that, and you don't. You're certainly not going through the Yellow Pages to find some maintenance company to look after your jet. What do you look for in the resume? And what if the guy shows up looking like something like Michael J. Fox out of The Russians Are Coming? He's got a little hip flash, just, yeah, I can do it. Ain't it all gimmick, never mind to me. Yeah, did you ever see Michael Pollard with a little snot running down? You got a guy standing there, he's got those Jughead pants on, right, with that funny flyboy hat, and he's got a little hip flask, and he's got a little bit of snot dripping out of one nostril going, I can do it. Hell yeah. Hell yeah, I repaired these things. It's a lot of responsibility, to my way of thinking, and I could be very wrong, it's a lot of responsibility, and I thought, Jesus, of all the things that I would never own, it would be, and I would love to own my own jet, I would love to have my own mode of transportation in that way, it would be a great thing to be able to just get in your jet and fly to wherever the hell it is you wanted to go, but I don't know how one maintains, one hires, one keeps together one's own private freaking jet. And when you hear a story like you heard today, man, I bet you the jet sales, they couldn't possibly be happy about that. A guy, you know, of all the things I had to think about, oh, you forgot about pressurizing the doors. Well, why didn't somebody tell me, man, now the plane's going down? Yeah, you did it, Payne. You didn't pressurize the ding-dang doors, and now with the air's getting sucked out. There was one thing I forgot on that checklist. I forgot. And the way I am with gas... I told him one night on the air, talking about running out of gas. When I lived in Orlando, I guess it was just my 20s, and I happened to be living in Orlando, Florida. I ran out of gas once a weekend. I was always running out of gas once a weekend, ran out of gas, because there was much, much more important things to spend your money on than filling a tank full of gas. So I'd run out once. Imagine me in my own freaking airplane. That's the end of that. One time you run out of gas, it's the end. And it would happen to me if I had come into some money when I was 21 or 22, got my own Learjet, you know, whatever. Ronnie Van Zandt, hey, Lynyrd Skynyrd, you guys want to fly someplace? Mr. Holly, will you want to, goddamn, I love your music, man. Just get on, I love that album, Street Survivors. Yeah, go ahead, throw the stuff in the back. Either that or a whole lot of freeway landings, you know. Phil Hendry, for the 18th time this year, another jet lands on the freeway. Oh, yeah, it's Hendry's again.
We interviewed Mr. Henry. This is how many?
This will be my fifth freeway landing.
Well, aren't you just something else, you moron?
Mr. Henry landed on the freeway today. He landed on the 101. This will be, he's landed on every freeway in L.A. now. The 101, 405, the 5, the San Bernardino. He's been out to Santa Monica, down to Garden Grove Freeway. He's up there on the Ventura. I think he hit the Simi Valley Freeway once. He's on the Golden State. He's down there on the San Diego. He hit that, that Marina Del Rey, right near the airport. Anyway, Mr. Van Zandt, would you like a ride? It's Phil Henry Show here at 1-800-449-8686. So to me, that was the, and I don't mean to be morbid, it was the first thing I thought of, that God dang pain, why don't you take freaking Delta, man? Leave the flying to them, will you? The friendly skies.
Bonjour et merci de voler des lins à rien de Phil Henry.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. And these guys that are rich and they buy these airplanes, they wind up crashing in these things. Not all of them, but for instance, people say, look at all the famous people that die in little airplanes. Well, yeah, it's because they can afford to buy them. They can afford to charter them. The only guy that can do that is a rich guy. So that's why most of those rich guys, Stevie Ray Vaughan, it doesn't matter who you want to mention, Payne Stewart's only the latest in a long line of celebrity victims of small plane crashes because they can afford these airplanes, but they're always buying junk. It's the movie I saw the other day on cable, Patsy Cline. Did you ever see this Patsy Cline story with Jessica Lange? What was the name of that movie? Sweet Memories or something like that. It's about Patsy Cline. Dude, the end of the movie, this is a bio about Patsy Cline, right? And about her music and about her whole life. It was like that coal miner's daughter. And you figure, you know, a woman whose life ended violently and tragically, which Patsy Cline's did, she died in a plane crash, you know, you sort of let that take care of itself. And at the very end, you know, maybe have her singing a song and then maybe just a rolling epilogue that says Patsy Cline died 3 days later in a plane crash. No, they got to show it. Not only do they show it from two different angles. They're flying to some county fair, some state fair. A do, or whoever the guy is that's flying the plane. Say, Clem, don't that look like a holy Christ? So they show everybody in the cockpit just go, and then they pan, and they show this plane just go, boom, right on the side of this mountain. Just, and then I'm the director. What's the point I'm trying to make? Her life was an explosive moment. Whatever, I get it already, man. I know Patsy Cline died in a plane crash. Yeah, well, you don't really know how she died in a plane crash, do you? Well, come on, I don't want to see it. Yeah, come on, you got to watch this. It's great. What the hell am I watching here? Torah, Torah, Torah? Or am I watching a Patsy Cline story? What about the Buddy Holly story? They didn't show him, but they didn't show that. Everybody knows the guy died in a plane crash. You got to show it? Sure. And then Buddy died. But that isn't all. Look at how he died. Oh, for God's sake, come on. Wham! Blows a freaking cornfield to pieces. Maybe just show his glasses flying out of the plane while you're at it. How about just showing Buddy flying out of the plane? Yeah, that's just the last shot of the movie is just the glasses resting on the snow of South Dakota. And speaking of South Dakota, how many guys have been buying it, getting greased in South Dakota? Freaking Buddy Holly and Payne Stewart got greased. Man, it's got to be a record for one state. Buddy Holly and Payne Stewart both got greased in the snow of South Dakota. God rest their loving, ever-loving souls. But in any event, I would say if you're wealthy, you're thinking of buying a plane, buy one that works. Buy one. Get a pilot that's sober. I don't know. The whole Lynyrd Skynyrd crash is still a mystery to me. Who is the guy flying that thing? Am I correct in my understanding that thing ran out of gas too? Oh, geez, boys, I think, you know, they went into a swamp. They were playing cards in the back. Guy says, Christ, man, I got fumes going here. Well, that's it. Hang on. We'll belly. I think I can belly it in. What the hell are you talking about, belly it in? I can do it. I've seen a movie. I've seen flying tigers. What the hell are you talking about? We're on mountains here. You're going to belly it in on a mountain. No, I can do that, man. I've seen flying tigers on Ronald Coleman, John Wayne. I know how the damn thing go. Just watch me belly it in.
That was the funniest part of that flick. Patsy Cline, great singer, great life, the whole thing. And she's flying to the state fair, and they show that plane just pow! Very, you know what I mean? In other words, you're watching a drama, a melodrama, lives, people, conversation, dialogue, everything. It's the one big spike. If they had a special effects guy there who was going, oh, come on, man, I got the stuff left over from the Twilight Zone movie. Let me use it. Oh, I don't know. It's a melodrama, man. Let me have one lousy explosion, okay? Well, it's not about that. It's about her life. Come on. All right, do it. Pow! God. Yeah. And the special effects, really good, Bob, using that Revell kit again, huh? That's real nice. You might want to paint it next time, okay? Looking at that freaking gray plastic. See, what I'm going to do is I'll take the little Revell plane and throw it into the mountain. And I light it on fire first with this lighter fluid. My kid taught me all about it. You see this? Do you remember those Japanese Godzilla movies? Oh, Flash Gordon was beautiful, yeah. On a string, this little rocket just... But the sparklers coming out from the ass end of that thing. Or how about those World War II movies? They're like World War II flicks. They show naval battles. They'd be little toy boats in a bathtub. Just sinking. And they'd have to slow it down. Make it little, oh, boy. It was the one that I said. But those Godzilla flicks were great. What he whacked, the one that we made in America, of course, was out of sight. You know, what do you knock the real biplane out of the air? But these ones, they had Godzilla in Japan, and he's knocking an airplane, and it's a little plastic job. So let me do this, okay? Look at it. It's the Patsy Cline. Now, come on. All right, do it. You're such a big shot special effects guy. Yeah. You worked the Twilight Zone movie? Yeah, okay, great. Go ahead. All right, here's what we do. What is that? It's a little plastic thing. Come on. I'm going to light that on. Hey, I think it went good, except we could see your hand with the match, Ed. Can we cut that out of the movie? You see the guy's hand come in and light it. I don't know. I'm going to airbrush that out or something. Speaking of Disneyland, I went to Disneyland yesterday with our 8-year-old Catherine. I want to just bring this up because I think it's interesting. And since we're talking about disasters. Now, Disneyland is fun for an 8-year-old. It was fun for me. Once every 2 years is all I can do. Took Catherine, she's 8, and we took the guys, too. We took the big guys. We said, you guys, bug off, do what you want to do. When you got a boy 13, 12, and 10, they don't want to hang around with mommy. So you guys just go do your thing. Oh, cool! Okay, so off they go, and they can puke on Space Mountain, whatever they want to do. So we got little Catherine, and this is her birthday, so she wants to go on her rides. And I'm thinking, Disneyland, I haven't... When's the last time I went on Mr. Toad's Wild Ride? Never. Not since I was 10. But now you got an 8-year-old girl. You got to do everything that she wants to do. I revisited my youth. I was on Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, the swan boats that go through the storybook land. We did that. I did Alice in Wonderland. I did Snow White. I did, I did Snow White. And I did Peter Pan. And then we did the story about the Mr. Gadget coaster in Toontown, which lasts 45 seconds. I timed it, and we were in line a half hour. They got to do something about that Mr. Gadget roller coaster, okay? I mean, it's one of my favorites. We did the Matterhorn, talked her into going to the Matterhorn. But here's the thing, Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. How many of you guys, when's the last time you went on? You're a grown adult. You haven't been on Mr. Toad's Wild Ride since you were 5. I go on a Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, and I'm going, God damn. I don't remember this part of the story, because we're going through, and apparently the story is Mr. Toad, does he get drunk or something? But he drives out of his library into the streets of London, and he's going the wrong way, and he goes the wrong way, and he, pow, smack into a train. So you figure, wow, am I going to wake up in a hospital? The door opens. It's one of those cheesy rides where the doors open and the car goes through, and the doors open after the train wreck and goes into hell. And Mike's nodding like, yeah, man, I've been on a ride last week. That's how it ends. Mr. Toad goes to hell? It's the name of the ride, Mr. Toad. He was drinking. Was that it? He was drunk driving. You go straight to hell. There's a really good message for the kids. I swear, the thing was, we're going through hell. I mean, they've turned the heat up in there. They have the effects. They have a sauna-like, very humid effect. I said, Jesus, if I'm not mistaken, this is hell, isn't it? Maria's like, yeah, that's where we were in hell, and the ride ends. Catherine thought it was cool. Cool. You know, we almost run over this cop and cool, you know, and you see that little mole librarian. He goes, look out, runway. And you go through the door and everything. I said, Catherine, Mr. Toad died and went to hell. And she goes, yeah. I guess it had more of an apocalyptic sense for me, and you know, being 47 and feeling the hot breath of mortality on my neck. God damn it. I got out of this ride. Mr. Toad went to hell. How about Mr. Toad rots in hell? You could go through to hell and then have him rotting in his grave, moldering in a box. This is just a skeleton there. Mr. Toad's dangling toad skeleton. Mr. Toad rots in hell. All right, everybody, come on. You have to be 3 feet high to get in. And we went on the Matterhorn, and I got to give it to the 8-year-old, Catherine. We talked to her, and she said, come on, let's go on a roller coaster, Catherine. She said, I don't want to. I said, you know what? We know better. We're the adults. We know better. You got to go you're going to go on the Matterhorn. It's not that bad of a roller coaster. As roller coasters go, it's one of the slowest, easiest roller coasters going. Well, okay. It didn't have to do anything to talk her into it. She was cool with it. We got on the Matterhorn. But as we're getting on, I just got done talking her into it. I just got done saying to her, Catherine, it's a gas. You'll dig it. There's a woman standing there vomiting. Having just gotten off the ride, leaning over a fence. And I said to Maria, you'd think she'd have the common decency to Jesus, you know, like, get out of here. And Maria goes, she's sick. Okay, is that all right with you? She's sick. Yeah, but I mean, I had a little dribble of puke, you know, just go over to a bush. Go hide in a bush. Yeah, just, excuse me. No, man, there was a line of people going in, 30-minute wait, and we were treated. You know how you have those little different shows and exhibits as you're going into Space Mountain or something? Ours was a woman vomiting, just... Now, let me tell you what I didn't do the teacups. Teacups are lame. But you want to see somebody vomiting. Go on a teacup ride, man. You'll see a streak of puke around the inner side of the cup. Just wag. Hey, cool, man. You hit all sides. We did the teacups, but then we went over to that, let me tell you, the biggest ripoff at that park. Don't tell me if you're thinking of what I'm thinking, Mike. Hour and a half wait for the stinking ride, Rocket Rods. Yeah! The Rocket Rods, the brand new ride at Tomorrowland. I can't even begin to tell you what an anticlimactic experience that. I would rather sit there and watch that woman puke than go back on the Rocket Rod. I had more fun standing in line for the Matterhorn watching that woman go than get on that silly, silly Rocket Rod. Starts off really cool because it takes off real fast. And guess what? For the first time in years, I got the front seat on a roller coaster. I got the front seat on the Rocket Rod, and I got the front seat on the stinking Matterhorn, which is fine. The red, you know, it's better than the Rocket Rods. So I got to... He goes, you're number one, sir. I go, yeah, baby. I'm sitting there. I'm belting in. I'm ready to fly. Takes off awesome. It pops a wheelie right when it takes off. So that you're up on a wheelie, and you're going, this is bitching. As soon as it hits the turn, it slows down to a dead stop, then takes off again. And basically what it is a series of quick takeoffs and stops and takes off and stops. I looked at Maria. I go, an hour and a half I waited for this? I had more fun standing in line looking at Walt Disney going, the world of tomorrow. And he's showing Daffy Duck flying in a spaceship or something. They had that big, where they used to have the Monsanto, you know, that inner, whatever the hell that thing is, that 360-degree film. Yeah, look at that crap. It's really interesting because they show films of what people thought the future would look like. Boy, if there's one thing that the human race is terrible at, and we're good at a lot of things, this is the one thing the human race continually fails at. We fail constantly at being able to predict our own future. We cannot, for the life of us, figure out where we're going to be in 10, 20 years. We got ourselves flying through outer space. We got ourselves going from India to Mexico in a tube. We got ourselves these cars they were showing that were magnetic and could scale the side of a wall. What is this? By 1975, we'll have the magnetic car. Okay. They used the old people mover track for the rocket rods. They did that people mover track. Well, guess what, Jack? They're going to have to upgrade that. And they also use part of the old Autopia, too. It goes out, some of that Autopia crap, you know, out toward the edge of the park, yeah. It was a lame, lame thing. If that's as good as it gets, Jack, you guys got to go back to the drawing board. That sucked. On ice, my friend. I'd rather go over there to... We went over to... Hey, by the way, that Raiders of the Lost Ark was cool. Hell, I'd rather be on the Jungle Ride. Listen to that guy go for the 800th time. He got it in the end with that rhinoceros horn going up the guy's ass. Oh, man, they've been doing that for 40 years. All right, it's Phil Hendry here. Our number, we got Doug Danger coming up later on, and we also will be talking with a very special friend of ours from our engineering department, Warren Benman. You won't want to miss that interview. He survived a fall of some 200 feet on the Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry Show at 1-800-449-8686. You know, Disneyland is not as cool as Disney World because they got all those hotels you can get drunk at before you go into the park. Plus, they got that Pleasure Island, which is pretty cool. Plus, they got Epcot, which is all, you know, it's very nice. And they got the MGM Studios. They got a pretty good broadcast station facility there. You know, I did a show there from there. You know, they don't turn those rides off. They got to keep them on all night. They keep the rides on all night. I guess it costs them more to power the ride up than it would just to keep it on. So I walk outside about 11 midnight. I'm smoking a cigarette. I was working in Atlanta at the time. And I walk outside. I'm smoking a cigarette. I can hear the ride. All this crap going on. It's like something out of Carnival of Souls. So anyway, that's the Disney. And we did the merry-go-round, too. And oh, boy. It's fine. I don't mind being on a merry-go-round. I got no problem. They had a band, a bunch of guys. You know, old guys dressed up in those 1890-style band uniforms, and they were riding on the merry-go-round. And they're playing something. These guys look like 55, 60-year-old guys, and the looks of their faces like, oh, boy, why? Why now? Why at this stage in my life? Why? Guys playing the drums. So what the hell else happened? Oh, yeah, Mr. Toad Goes to Hell, the Jungle Cruise, that was great, and then the big, huge cinnamon bun, and that was great. That's what we did for the little kid's 8th birthday. And how much did it cost? $190 for the 6 of us. That ain't bad, huh? Because we've got the 4 kids. If you take 6 adults. And then Maria says to me, you know what we should do? Let's get the year pass. It's a bill per person. That's 6 bills. But you can get in for the whole year. I said, I got to. Did you do that? You're going to do? How many times am I going to go to Disneyland? I ain't going to go to Disneyland more than once every 2 years. I'm what? First of all, I live out in Westlake. Second of all, I live out in Westlake. And third of all, I live out in freaking Westlake. 848 miles from the nearest anything. They had a Club Disney up the street from us. Guess what? They closed it. Why? None of the farmers out there wanted to go to Club Disney. There ain't nobody out there under the age of 100. So, you know, there's no kids. They open up a Club Disney, there's no kids. You got a bunch of guys in straw hats trying to get in. All right, well, you know, have you got any kids? No, Jesus, Bob, we've got 800 adults in here, man. They're all doing those stickers, and then we got a character breakfast, which, by the way, we went to the character breakfast for the kids, and they had Minnie, and she's out of sight, and then they had the people from, what is it, Beauty and the Beast? And who's the good-looking guy? Anyway, make a long story short, when you're bald and you're at a public gathering of some kind, let's say you're doing an outdoor show for kids, like at Universal, like at the Chipmunk Show. So we're in there, and we're the character. What do they got to do? They got to walk over and polish my head. Because I'm bald. Because that was part of the shtick to make the little kitties. Yeah, so the one guy, the big, good-looking guy that wanted the chick to marry him in Beauty and the Beast, Belle, is the chick. And the guy's name is Maurice, let's say. And he's good looking, and he's dancing around, and he's singing to the kids, and they're all just digging it. And I'm just about to dig into my scrambled eggs, and the guy comes up, takes a handkerchief, and starts buffing my head like he's shining shoes. Because this is what happens in life when you're the bald man in the crowd. Yeah, I'm just halfway up with some nice eggs and salsa, and just like, ah, and I can feel the top of my head getting buffed by some dude in a wig. Yeah, what is up with that, man? You're the guy wearing a wig. In tights. Tights, a wig, boots, and he's buffing my head. And everybody in the joint, ah! Yeah, that's the other thing he did. Just took a little spit. I'm just going to shine that up for you, sir. Like, I'm the guy to be laughed at, not him. Like, I'm the cat that's running around in tights at 7 o'clock in the morning in the hotel restaurant there. Anyway, I'm not. I should. Am I taking it personally? I shouldn't do that. That's a very bad thing. Well, okay. So, all right. It hurt me. I was embarrassed, and it hurt me. Oh, God, it hurt me so much.
So that was the deal. It was a lot of fun, and happy birthday, Catherine. Eight, you're looking good. Everything's going to be fine. And I got into it with her, because since it's her day, I tried to get her ahead of me. I wanted to push her and Maria ahead of me so they could get into the seat that they wanted on one of the roller coasters, and she pushed me. And I said, you're eight, I'm big, I'm an adult, you know push adult. No, Google that, but you know push adult. And she started to bawl. I said, let me tell you something. I'm going to take you off this ride. Right now, we'll go to the car. You never push an adult. Well, almost never. But she was great. She forgave me. And then she started sharing some of that really soggy caramel corn that she purchased. And some of that, what is that crap called? Cotton candy. It's like pure whipped sugar. You know that I get major headaches and I become almost demented when I eat too much sugar? In other words, I go into almost a schizophrenic rage when I eat too much sugar. And I ate handfuls of it yesterday. Just large things of just shovel that crap down because that's the only thing there is to eat. That and a hamburger, a pizza. Pizza, hamburger, sugar. Did I get the frozen banana? Man, I was the frozen banana. So anyway, tonight Doug Danger is coming up. He'll be talking with us about the interesting story about models selling their eggs, their ovarian eggs. We also have an interview, as I mentioned, with one of our engineers here, Warren Benman, about a frightful fall that took place. And more of your phone calls. More of your phone calls tonight at 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. And a reminder, you can visit the Phil Henry Show website, philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com to find out all the BS that is not going on a show. 1-800-449-8686.